Do you have a favorite curry place?
There is this amazing curry place up in Northland where I live. Just has the most amazing hot curries. Nice. And just seriously, you need to
check
it out.
Are you like korma? Are you butter chicken? Are you...
I'm actually like in between, like a spinach.
Palak paneer?
Yes.
Yes.
So good.
Oh my God.
Maybe it's the fact that it's got like spinach in it that I'm like, this must be like, this is okay.
That's
right.
It's healthy.
Welcome to another episode of the State of the Artist podcast. This week, we catch up with Jen Y, accredited mindfulness facilitator that helps individuals, groups, and workplaces flourish and thrive with her mentoring services. She's a co-lead of the Rotary Youth Leadership Awards, facilitator of the Pop-Up Business School, and founder of Jen Y Insights, mindfulness teaching, facilitation, and mental health first aid. In this episode, we talk about misconceptions of millennials, how mindfulness could apply to you, approaching social media with a goal, vulnerability, and how she conquered fear with a 40-day challenge.
Let's start with a double high five.
Yes!
Thanks for joining the show.
Thank you. I'm so excited to be here.
So tell me a bit about yourself.
So I'm Jen, and a lot of people know me as Jen Y because my website's called Jen Y Insights, and funnily enough, Jen Y sounds like Generation Y, bottled down to Jen Y, and I'm a millennial. So I provide a whole range of services to help people make the kind of impact they want to be making.
That's awesome.
Thank you.
So millennial.
Yeah.
I'm an old man. I'm on my last year of being 30, and I think a lot of people in my age bracket, they've read the term millennial through the news. Maybe they haven't had a whole lot of conversations with millennials.
Sure.
What are some of the common misconceptions of millennials?
Okay, well, I think even just defining it's a really good place to start. So my understanding is that millennials are those born between 1980 to 2000. So I'm smack bang in the middle of that age bracket. And so by being born in that era, I kind of have built up a lot of understanding as well as what people get annoyed about by millennials and then also what they love about them. So I think common misconceptions are that we're lazy, that we don't really care about much, that we just want to be doing stuff that's purposeful and meaningful all the time. And the thing is that if I'm allowed to generalize about a generation, millennials really care a lot about bigger social issues. So we've been through the global financial crisis where a lot of us graduated from university and, oh, hey, surprise, there aren't jobs available for you. So I think we've come into this world of work where we are having to make things up as we go along. And it's like, okay, so the normal world of work, that's actually not guaranteed to be there. So how can you really build something of your own, creating rather than consuming all the time? So having multiple different streams of income or building something on the side, it's, we're not apathetic, we're not lazy. We may just not want to be working towards something that we don't care about.
So millennials, they care and they hustle.
Huh. Oh my gosh,
that's a good kind of summary.
It's a great summary. Yeah. One of my mentors says that some of the work that I do is like a mindful hustle.
Yeah.
So it's doing it in a really caring, compassionate way. It's always, you know, how can I help? And it's always in a genuine way. It's not like, hey, I'm going to sell my stuff. I'm going to sell who I am. It's, no, I really care about who you are, what you've got, your organization, and let's collaborate.
Brilliant. Let's talk about your journey a bit.
Hey.
So you are a mindfulness trainer. Would that be fair? How did you sort of come across that journey?
Great. So a mindfulness trainer is part of what I do. So some people go full into it, and I provide it as like a service on top of everything else in terms of helping people to grow, develop, and have the kind of impact they want to have. So I got into mindfulness about 4 or 5 years ago now, living down the street from a yoga instructor, and I saw something in her that I thought, I need some of that in my life. You know, she was really calm. She managed to get things done. She had this great sense of presence and clarity about her, where I was in my final semester of finishing up law exams and art history exams, and I was, you know, really struggling with stress, and I thought there must be something in this. And so I just started, I downloaded a podcast, learned to meditate, and I learned from there. And so I've been regularly practicing some form of yoga, mindfulness, meditation officially for about 3.5-4 years. Unofficially, I've been practicing and using my breath exercises since I was a young girl when we had in my family a terminally ill and disabled brother, and so just learning how to cope with the stresses of that, and it really helped me. And now I help others to find that same sense of clarity, calm, and just understanding what's going on.
That's great.
Thank
so
you.
For someone who's, I guess, a little bit unaware of the mindfulness space and what it is, how would you sort of summarize it to someone who's a little bit new to that whole concept?
Great question. So I start by saying, or getting rid of a misconception that it's not sitting in a cross-legged lotus position and levitating. If you know how to do that, feel free to teach me. I don't know how to do that. A lot of mindfulness is really using the breath and awareness to just take a step back, to be present, to slow down. I like to call it slowing down to speed up. So it's by taking that moment of pause, by slowing down, by using the breath, it's essentially telling the body and the mind that you're safe.
Yeah.
So it's using the breath to really help you to function at an optimal, like a peak performance level, essentially. It's like I think of it as like a superpower.
That's great.
Yeah.
And so can you talk me through a little bit about when you meet with either an individual or organization and you take them through this process? What is that usually like?
Sure. So it starts with just seeing where they're at in terms of how their staff are doing or how they're individually doing, where it might be doing a bit of a questionnaire or asking a few questions. A lot of organizations and people at the moment are struggling with this. It's like an epidemic of busyness, you know, really feeling like I'm going from this to this to this, and I'm not having space in the day to breathe, really. So it's, okay, so what if there were little techniques or things that we can do with your staff or with you individually, where you can just have pockets in the day? It could be like a minute, literally a minute, to slow down and pause, just so you can kind of like get yourself together a little bit, like recoup, recalibrate, and then move into that next stage. So rather than carrying everything that's been going on previously, maybe it's in the last meeting or it's in like a really stressful conversation you just had, it's, I'm going to take this moment just to slow down, to reflect on where I've been, and then I'm going to like leave that there for a bit, maybe write down a few actions or just breathe, and then I'm going to go into the next thing. And people, they get it. Because they're going from emails or they're going from meeting to meeting to conversation, and they're not having time during the day to really just be for
That's
a bit,
right.
to really be present. And so it's having conversations with organizations about, you know, how's staff productivity, how's staff stress levels, how are they managing workloads and deadlines. And, you know, part of this is breathing exercises, and part of this is just having conversations with them about what's really important. And what are tips and tricks that you can do throughout the day to really make sure that you're performing really optimally?
That's great.
Yeah.
I spent 12 years in visual effects, well, 13 years in visual effects.
Wow.
And I worked at a company called Weta Digital. And it was all about constantly trying to deliver 10 out of 10 work every week. And it's immense pressure and deadlines and stress. So a company like that could definitely use your services. And even like myself as an artist, I mean, this is the State of the Artist podcast.
Yeah.
I think a lot of artists, I call it slightly bipolar. And not to sort of take anything away from the actual clinical diagnosis of people that are bipolar, but
totally.
I think artists either, if you're creating, you're happy. If you're not creating, you're depressed. And I find that I'm sort of one of those people who can't find that middle ground. I'm either all on creating or I'm not creating. And so I think mindfulness is probably a good thing for creatives and artists.
Yeah,
to
honestly,
practice, right?
as a creative myself, I consider myself creative because I do a lot of blogging and social media content, and having to use my creativity to think about content and mindfulness, just the state of being aware of what's happening in my mind and my brain. So self-limiting thoughts, or if it's like, oh, but this doesn't feel quite right. And it helps me to move through old perfectionistic tendencies that I used to have. So about, this isn't good enough. Who are you to do this? Are you qualified enough to do this? And just by using my breath to calm myself down a bit, or just recognizing thought patterns from years and years, and just knowing I don't have to believe that.
Yeah.
And it gives me the permission, in essence, to really do the work that I want to be doing and know that I'm here to do. And it gives me the courage to push past those really unhelpful thoughts and beliefs to get it out there. Otherwise, I'd be paralyzed. Yeah. So the fact that I've got this awareness of like what's happening in my mind, and I can just either park it or I can notice it and be aware of it and say, you know, thanks for that thought, but that's not helpful right now.
That's great.
It helps me to create.
It's getting rid of the sort of negative chatter that goes on in your head.
Like that little monkey mind that's going from thought to thought to thought. It helps to slow it down and bring a bit more clarity and presence into it.
Brilliant. So speaking about content and social media, let's talk.
Life segue.
Yeah, let's talk social media for a bit.
Yeah, so, totally.
How do you use social media, and how is it part of your life, and how is it part of what you do?
Well, I think as a millennial, I'm going to generalize again, I've grown up into this world. So, you know, mid high school, we started with things like Bebo and MySpace, and then moving into the worlds of Facebook, and then Instagram came along, and Twitter and YouTube. And so really just understanding this world and seeing how it's been evolving and how it can be used. And I think how I use it now is there was a bit of a mindset shift for me that happened about 18 months ago, I'd say, where I was feeling a bit overwhelmed about what to be doing career-wise. And I was feeling a bit lost about, there were all these big things happening in the world. There was, President Trump being elected, and then like angst and drama about, you know, climate change, what's going to be happening with the world, and then the future work and AI coming in and lots of stuff. And I just got to this place where I was like, I don't want to be just consuming all the time. You know, I want to be doing something that is more, it's contributing, it's creating, it's collaborating. And so that's now how I see social media. It was a switch from just consuming media all the time to actually, you know, some of the conversations that I have with friends, they're asking me to share some of these thoughts. And by doing that, it gives other people the permission to have those kind of conversations as well.
That's great.
Thank you.
And one thing I think that's kind of emerging is especially sort of what's recently happened in the news with Kate Spade and with Anthony Bourdain is depression. And also, and what leads into that is sort of talking about what's happening in our lives.
Yeah,
right? And
so important.
Vulnerability, and especially being an older guy, I think men are a lot more guarded than women in terms of talking about their feelings. So what are your thoughts on vulnerability? And do you have any sort of tips or tricks to stay on top of things?
That's a massive question. I think it's so important to have these kind of conversations about vulnerability, and then how to be vulnerable in a way that doesn't make people feel really scared about it, but it allows them to really live life more fully. So I love Brené Brown's work on the power of vulnerability and the gifts of imperfection. I think it was one of those books that I read a few years ago, The Gifts of Imperfection in particular, that it made sense. You know, it's perfect time. One of those things, one of those beautiful synchronistic moments where everything comes together. So I think being vulnerable and saying, you know, I'm not perfect, or hey, actually, I'm not feeling that great today, it allows people to see past this image that people are maybe projecting about themselves. So I think social media is it can be quite damaging, and it can also be really helpful. So I think with social media, it's really realizing that the stuff that's on there is curated. It's not an accurate representation of real life. You know, I'm not going to put up on social media, I had this for breakfast, or I just brushed my teeth, or actually I went to bed early tonight because I really needed to do that. It's showing perfection. And then being vulnerable about where everyone is currently at, it allows people to interact as people, I really think. So I really like to practice that personally. So if I'm having a great day, I'm going to say I'm having a great day. If I'm feeling a bit anxious, or I'm having like a period of low mood, or even like a bit of depression or something, because I think that's a normal part of things, is to have a whole range of emotions and range of experiences rather than being happy, happy, happy the whole time. You know, that's an unrealistic expectation. When I'm open about that, I can get the help that I need. And when I'm open about that, it allows people to see me as a whole human rather than just this image. And then they feel comfortable enough to reach out to me to get that help when they need it.
Yeah.
So I think it just it allows for better relationships.
It's a rarity on social media. There are some people that are, they have the no filter. Like, do you know this girl named Loving Ellie's Belly?
No, I don't, but tell me.
So she's based in Christchurch, or Queenstown.
Mm.
She kind of popped on social media when she's filming a video with her and her girlfriend, and then she either laughed and then farted, and then she shat her pants.
No!
And there was, she put the video of that whole thing on the internet.
Oh, that's
like
amazing.
Like, I don't care, this is what happened, and this is me. And and she went crazy viral on the internet.
That's amazing.
And so incoming into her direction came, you know, a lot of haters, which is just what happens on the internet, but a lot of people that said, like, good on you for, like, just putting your unfiltered self out there.
Yeah, totally.
And so now her big thing, on, especially on her Instagram, is self-love and just putting yourself out there. And even her Instagram name, like, Loving Ellie's Belly, like, she puts photos of her belly and her bum, and like she usually doesn't put up makeup, and she, you know, it's just the raw unfiltered herself. And her Instagram story this morning, it was Love Island, which is that show that a lot of people are watching now. And she had Love Island on a laptop in the bathroom, and she's going for a poo while watching, and she did an Instagram story of that, like, this is what I do when I poo now. But that is so hard to find nowadays, people who have that confidence to just take all their armor off and present themselves to the world. So I totally agree with you.
Yeah.
Like, it's such an important thing.
Yeah, well,
she's an extreme case.
Yeah.
I wish I could get to that point, but...
No, there are totally other instances of, you know, different elements of vulnerability. And I think where I'm at, business-wise and career-wise, I share, like, how I'm feeling.
Yeah.
And I think that, for me, that's vulnerability. Like, I don't think I'd share, like, if I would have fart somewhere or shot, because that's just... I'm now thinking, like, if I've done that, that's just really inappropriate. Anyway, I think, especially with being out there on social media and having any kind of, like, public voice, or, you know, putting yourself out there, whether it's a side hustle or it's a business, or it's like, I really care about this, I'm passionate about this, it's, Brené Brown calls it that you're out in the arena.
Yeah.
And when you're out in the arena, people who aren't in there will, that they'll give their 2 cents.
Yeah.
And part of that's because they're not playing out in that space. And so one of the things that I love about vulnerability and also mindfulness is that it is that little reminder that I'm doing this, and this is taking courage. And I'm using vulnerability to put my stuff out there, because I know from experience now, from doing different experiments, whether it's like 40 days of growth or 40 days of facing fear, that when I do that, it gives other people the permission to do the same.
So I love that. So tell me about this 40 days of growth. What was that?
Yeah, totally. So 40 days of growth actually evolved from 40 days of facing fear. So with my own work with developing people or helping people, I like to personally do that myself. So I'm really into pushing myself outside my comfort zone on a regular basis, whether it's going on a leadership development program or it's doing an experiment. And so every so often I like to do like a 40-day experiment and see how that goes. So for 40 days of growth, I did my absolute best, wasn't perfect, of blogging every day for 40 days and just sharing some of the key things that I'd learned over the last 3.5 years of working in leadership development and learning and development, and being coached by some of Australasia's like best coaches and mentors, which I feel incredibly privileged about. And it evolved from 40 days of facing fear, which I'd love to talk about quickly if that's okay.
Definitely.
Which it was a personal experiment that I did from the 1st of March last year for 40 days, where I did something every single day for 40 days that either I was afraid of, or that I'd never done before, or that was like totally out of my comfort zone, to the point that I was like, oh shit, like in that oh shit zone. And it was one of the best things I've ever done. And I think it made me feel vulnerable. It taught me a lot about courage. And I think the side effect was it really taught me about self-love and how to really love myself for constantly doing things. So, I mean, I blogged about it every single day. I don't think I would be here doing this podcast with you if I hadn't done something like that. So really pushing myself outside my comfort zone, I was blogging about it on social media every single day, and people were reaching out to me and saying, oh, that's really cool what you're doing. And hey, like, I want to do something similar. So I had some friends who did like 14 days of it, some who did like a full 40 days, and they were like, wow, you need to do more of this. And so like where I'm at the moment, I would not be there without having done that 40-day challenge.
That is amazing.
Thank you.
Wow, I would love to do that as well.
I highly recommend it.
It builds sort of confidence, and they call it fear inoculation, right?
Ooh.
And it just preps you every day to sort of go out and attack and not sort of worry about what do other people think.
That's the thing. It's momentum. So it's like, you know, you could be doing something once a week or once every few days, but it's like by doing something every single day and having that accountability of whether it's like a post to like a friend or it's like posting on social media. Like I did it to my whole network, which in hindsight now I'm kind of like, that was really brave.
What was one of the most fearful things that you encountered during that 40-day challenge?
Oh, my parents are going to laugh about this. I think a lot of people are going to laugh. So as long as I can remember, I've had this fear of birds, like birds that are bigger than sparrows or blackbirds, and I was terrified of chickens. And so I think it was day four, I flew home to Auckland for the weekend, and I told my parents, I said, I want to get over this fear, you know, I'm really going to push myself to do this. It was basically a phobia, and so I challenged myself to hold chickens. I had to like work up to doing that. So even just, you know, getting near to the chicken pen and then I'd run away because I was so frightened.
It's a proper phobia.
You know, like totally irrational and just like building myself up to doing that. So like when I could, you know, I held it. I mean, I'm not glad I was wearing rubber gloves at the time because I was like really frightened of like them scratching me or just this is how irrational it was. But doing something that really frightened me so much and getting through that, it's just, you know, what you said, like fear inoculation, it feels so powerful. And this self-love afterwards being like, you did it, honey, you got this.
That's amazing.
Yeah, so that was a big one. And I got a flu injection, which might not seem like a big deal to a lot of people, but I had like a full-blown like 20-30 minute panic attack leading up to it because I was so frightened. Went skinny dipping for the first time. That was a bit nerve-wracking. Shot a gun. I've never shot guns before. And another little thing, which some girls or guys might get, I asked out a guy that I'd had a crush on for a while and just fully asked him. And I didn't die. So that was really cool.
That's awesome.
Yeah. And it went positively. We went on a few days and it was really sweet.
That is so cool.
Yeah.
So 40 days of blogging. So can we talk a little bit about content and creation of content? And I find that a lot of people who are influencers or they're really putting themselves out in the social media arena, they find it a little bit overwhelming because you have so many platforms. And if you're creating multiple pieces of content on multiple platforms, it could kind of get overwhelming.
Have you
found any systems to sort of stay on top of things?
Yeah, definitely. I use like a whole different things, and some of it is like mental tricks and others are like time saving tricks. So I'm really aware of like when my best creative times are. So if I'm wanting to do like writing, I like to do it like first thing in the morning or like at that kind of like 4 to 6 period or like that 5 to 7 period when I've got like that second wind. I'll do people stuff in the afternoon, but it's, I think one is like the awareness of like when my creative energy is the best and when like I can really focus. So that's one thing. I turn off my notifications. Like if I want to get content done, if I really want to just like smash out like a full week's worth of content, like I won't check my phone for a few hours, which might freak some friends out. And sometimes they do get a bit annoyed and they're like, Jen, come back to us. We want to like make lunch plans. So I'm like, hey, you know, I need to get this done. So notifications, I only have very few that get through. I've got my phone on silent most of the time. I, like we were talking earlier before the interview about like Instagram notifications, I've never had those on at all. So if I want to know what's going on those channels, like I have to physically go into them on my phone and my laptop. To really focus on getting the content done, I can't remember what it was, but I installed a few years ago on the Facebook application on my laptop something that I don't see the newsfeed. So whenever I'm going into that, I'm going into that because I've got an agenda to get through. So I can see messages, I can see notifications, and I can see events, but I don't see I don't get distracted by what's going on in the newsfeed, because I know that can be quite dangerous. It's like you get stuck in that scrolling pattern. Little techniques like the Pomodoro technique.
Yeah.
Do you know the Pomodoro technique?
Yeah, your sort of brain can only handle, is it 20 or like 40 minutes?
25 minute
chunks, right?
So I really love the power as a creative to like time block my time. So I'm really deliberate about that. So I'm almost like quite protective of my time, to be honest. So I set aside like good 2 to 3 hour chunks, like on certain days of the week where I'm like, that's what I want to do on that day. And I think because I do that, I think it actually gives my mind a bit of ease where it's like, oh, you know, I really want to be doing this at this time. And it just gives me that bit of ease where I know I've blocked that time out later in the week where I can do that.
Brilliant. Yeah. I love it.
Thanks.
Those are great. I think people are going to find those really useful.
Thank you.
So if we can sort of rewind a bit, you've been involved in some really cool sort of programs. One was the Rotary Youth Leadership Awards program. Can you tell me a little bit about what that was and sort of how you got involved with it?
The Rotary Youth Leadership Awards program, or it's known as RYLA for short. It's one of those programs that, along with like Outward Bound or Spirit of New Zealand, that's really changed things for me, to be honest. So I heard about it, I think it was actually through like an Instagram post that a friend did a few years ago, that she did it in Auckland. And then I did some research and saw that it was coming up in Wellington. And so I was like, well, I'm not actually attached to a Rotary Club, but this looks like an amazing opportunity. And so I just contacted someone and they said, you know, you don't even have to be a member of Rotary to get onto the program. It's a 5-day youth leadership development program that really acknowledges people that are doing work in their communities or in their universities, like 18 to 25 year olds, to just come on this program and learn a bit more about developing their own leadership capabilities. So like enhancing their self-awareness, giving them opportunities to work in teams together and figure out, what am I good at in this team? What's my personality? And really understanding that is really valuable. We have incredible, it blows my mind every year, incredible speakers that come in from all walks of life to talk about a whole different bunch of subjects, from, you know, what does it mean to be a resilient leader, which is a really important quality. Storytelling, we're getting people in more next year to talk about more entrepreneurship and social enterprise and mental health, what it means to be a good leader, how to get through really challenging times. So really a lot of people coming in from different walks of life, even we get them to go into Parliament, and we've got like some MPs that come and speak. And I think last year we got to go and have a chat with the Governor General, and it's just, I feel incredibly lucky. I went on it as a participant a few years ago and then got voted back to go and be on the leadership team, and now I help to organise it and run it.
That's amazing.
It's an amazing program.
So you've talked to a lot of young entrepreneurs, I guess.
Yeah. And leaders.
And leaders. What sort of, what was one of your biggest takeaway from talking to all of the various people?
What I'm picking up more and more as people coming through is that there are so many people with amazing potential, and giving them an opportunity to really figure out what their potential is and giving them a chance to express it and to unleash it and to have it really supported, it's incredible. It makes such a difference, like putting them into an environment with people who either care about similar things or who can connect them with people who can help them make that dream a reality. Honestly, like having people around you that support you and support an idea or support what you care about, it makes the biggest difference. There's the Jim Rohn quote that you are the average of the 5 people that you spend the most time with, and I really believe that is, it's so true. So I think sometimes there are people that have amazing ideas or they've got amazing potential, and they just need people who can support them, who can draw out that potential and really see it and surround them with the resources and support that they need. So I think the RYLA program really helps that, because sometimes they come in and they're a bit timid and they're really unsure. But then by the end of the 5 days, especially, spoiler alert, after we've pushed them through during a high ropes course, which scares a lot of people, they realize that they're capable of more than they think. It's incredible.
That's great. Awesome. Thanks. So community, sense of belonging. Yep. Support network.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah. Very and self-awareness, cool. I think, is a big one as well. you know, I talked about awareness as a creative of like where your energy is and like what you're good at. Really focusing upon your strengths and what you're good at, it's massive.
Definitely.
Yeah.
So the pop-up business school. You're a facilitator.
I am. I feel very lucky to be one.
Yeah, that's amazing. Could you tell me a little bit about what that is?
Oh, wow. So the Pop-Up Business School Aotearoa is the New Zealand version of what's been running in the UK for the last 6.5 to 7 years, and they've recently gone out into the US over the last year. So we help people to do what they love, build a business, and make money while having fun doing it. So it's this free 10-day course that travels around New Zealand. My co-facilitator Tony is currently in Tairawhiti, Gisborne, delivering the 10-day program, and it's a whole series of 20 workshops helping people with the very basics of what it takes to start up a business in this day and age. So it's just totally turning the paradigm on its head that it takes money to make money, and that you need a big loan or a massive business plan to make it happen. And the thing is, with the advent of the internet and social media, way more is possible now than it ever was before. I think the Pop-Up Business School is this amazing opportunity, and it's free because it's sponsored by local economic development agencies like Reader, or organisations like Te Puna Kokiri or Zero or local councils. It's giving people an opportunity to make whatever dream they've had a reality. And that for me is incredibly meaningful.
Amazing.
I feel really lucky with the work that I do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's really cool. I'll make sure links to everything we're talking about is 100%. In the show notes, because I'm sure a lot of people will be interested in finding out.
And if they want to reach out to me and like learn more about some of the things that I do, or they want support, like I'm always available.
Very cool.
Well, so when I've got my phone on, of course.
That's right. So what's next for you? Is there anything sort of big on the horizon that you're keeping your eye on?
Oh, well, I mean, apart from this amazing opportunity of being on a podcast with you, I mean, this has been a highlight of the day. Thank you.
Awesome. Thank you.
I think coming up for me is that, so I've got my own business, Gen Y Insights, and I've been ad hoc delivering a whole range of services that help people to make the kind of impact they want to be making, like ad hoc over the last 7 or 8 months. And by the end of June, I will be launching, these packages. They're essentially like just collate and put together a whole range of these services, whether it's like coaching, mentoring, leadership development, opening up opportunities and connections for people, just really like walking alongside them, as well as like helping them to find their own inner compass and working out a roadmap together of like getting to where they want to go.
Very cool.
That will be coming
out. That's super
out
exciting.
Soon.
Oh my God.
Thank you.
That's a huge thing to put.
This
sort
feels
it up.
Like a massive thing, to be honest.
Yeah.
And I talked about it in a video that I put out yesterday onto my social media platforms on LinkedIn, Facebook, and Interest. Just, you know, how excited I was feeling, yet simultaneously nervous, because it feels like a big thing to say, hey, I've got these services and I'm putting them into packages and you can purchase those.
Yeah.
That feels like a big thing to me.
So where could people find out about that?
Oh, I love these questions. You're so good at this. So you can find me on www.genyinsights.com, so genyinsights.com, or you can find me on Facebook, Instagram, LinkedIn, Twitter. I'm not really so big on, but maybe I can have my arm twisted to be more on that, and just reach out to me on the different platforms.
That's great.
Or come find me at the Biz Dojo, because it is amazing here.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for coming on to the show.
My pleasure.
It's been a pleasure having you on. And I think my takeaway is being more mindful, being more vulnerable, and fear inoculation.
I love that word.
Those are three big things that I'm personally going to work on.
It's been a pleasure.
You're a beautiful soul. And myself and the audience really appreciate how much you've shared with us today.
This has been an honor. Really, this has been beautiful. Thank you so much.
Thanks for tuning in to this week's episode. If you liked what you heard, we would really appreciate it if you could leave a review on iTunes. Every review does help. Next week, I catch up with polar expedition photographer, John Bozanov. Hope we can catch up then.
That was fun.
Is that all right?
Yes, amazing.